Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. Today, we are exploring the connection between ADHD and bullying. Research consistently shows that children with ADHD are more vulnerable to bullying than their neurotypical peers. For instance, a study utilizing data from the National Survey of Children's Health found that 47% of children with ADHD reported being victims of bullying, more than double the prevalence of the general population. And this increased susceptibility isn't just a childhood issue. Sadly, it does often extend into adolescence and adulthood, and this can really negatively affect self-esteem and mental health. And adolescents with ADHD who experience bullying are at a significantly higher risk for anxiety and depression compared to their peers without ADHD. My guest today is Brooke Schnittman, and she knows this firsthand. Brooke is an ADHD coach, a speaker and host of the podcast, Successful with ADHD. She works with adults to turn their challenges into strengths. And in our conversation, she shares her own story of turning challenges into strengths. She talks about how she was bullied from childhood into adulthood and how it shaped her understanding of ADHD in herself and others, and what helped her begin to rebuild a sense of self-worth. This episode isn't just about surviving bullying. It's about understanding how those experiences shape the brain and the stories we tell ourselves, and how healing becomes possible through awareness, coaching, and connection with others, which is why we are all here today. And at the end of today's episode, I'm going to share some additional strategies, both for parents and adults, that can help build proactive protection and resilience in environments where bullying or exclusion might occur. So please listen to the end if you're looking for more help. All right, so let's get on with the show. Hey, Brooke, welcome to Focus Forward.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I love that we just got to sit down recently together for your podcast, which I will have you tell everybody about. So can you introduce yourself to our listeners, tell them a little bit about your background and what you do, and include a little bit about your podcast?
Okay. Well, we have a similar background. So my background is in students with disabilities. Ironically, I was one of them, but didn't know it. So my journey started when I was diagnosed with auditory processing disorder, then fast forward learning differences, got accommodations for reading, because my mom was a teacher and knew I should get extended time for the SATs, right? But like, I didn't know if I had a learning disability or not, but I got it. And then on and off my whole life, I was suggested to have anxiety disorder, and I was seeing a therapist. So long story short, after years of bullying that I know we're going to be talking about today, I went into elementary education, which was so weird that I would want to go back to the place that I got bullied, but I did. Got a little bit braver in those 4 years, got a little bit more confident, and I took one special education class, just one, and I was like, I think I like this. So in true ADHD fashion, I was like, I need to learn everything about this. So I jumped into my master's right away, took the fastest path, did a year, got my master's in students with disabilities at NYU. The next day started a job in special education as a teacher, and was doing that in the middle school level, and then was an assistant director of special education and did all of that for about 14 years. And then in administration, I didn't know I had ADHD at the time, and it was playing to a lot of my deficits. And I also felt like very disconnected from the students. So I was like, I need to start my own job where I'm more connected with people rather than pushing paper and policy. So I moved to Florida with my family to get closer to them, and I got life coached, and then I met a friend who was an ADHD coach, had the same background as me, and she's like, you make a great ADHD coach. I was like, great. I don't know what coaching is, even though I was in a coaching program, didn't know I was being coached, and I do know ADHD, so sign me up.
Yeah.
So I did, and here I am 7 years later, and 6 months after I got The certification in ADHD coaching and started my business, I realized I had ADHD. And then I met my non-diagnosed ADHD husband at the time and his two non-diagnosed sons. And now we have a 3.5-year-old who is hyperactive, like extremely hyperactive. So we are one big neurodivergent family.
So we are here to talk about ADHD and bullying. And so, could you share why you were interested in talking about that and what you hope that our listeners will get out of that today?
So many people think that bullying is like a childhood thing that happens. And it very often does happen in childhood. But with ADHD, you're almost at a 50% chance to be bullied as a child. And then if you don't have the coping strategies and the communication strategies, and you still feel like you're living in that mentality, then you're more susceptible to be bullied in the workplace, especially when it's harder for you to adapt. So, just a little bit about my story. I was bullied from 8 to 35. On and off. And it started where I had transitioned from private school. My dad had owned the private school. So, I felt like, yeah, nothing could happen to me, you know, like whatever. I was in good hands, right? So, maybe like literally, like none of my symptoms of non-diagnosed ADHD really mattered at that point because, like, I was kind of protected in my bubble. And then I transitioned to public school to be with my neighborhood friends. And I thought I would automatically be friends with them. They would want to be friends with me. We hang out in our neighborhood. We go to camp together. They wanted nothing to do with me in fourth grade, to the point that I remember one of the people that I became friends with later on. I had gone up to the lunch table to say to her and to the other girls at the table, like, why don't you want to be friends with me? And she said, what are you, Steve Urkel? Did you watch Steve Urkel? And for those people who grew up at our time, like, that was not a redeeming thing to say, right? Like, he was weird, he was awkward, unless he was Stefan when he was not weird and awkward, right? So I was totally isolated and I didn't have the skills to cope. And, you know, whenever I would talk to my mom, who would talk to the principal, all I would be told is, oh, they're just jealous. And that didn't help. That made me more confused. Because even if that was true, which I don't think it was, but even if it was true, it's like, so now what? What
Yeah,
do I
what do you
do with
do with
that?
that?
Exactly. Exactly. So fast forward, like literally fourth and fifth grade were terrible. I was excluded. Even my fourth grade teacher started bullying me. She would call me up in front of the whole class. I remember, you know, like she just didn't like the fact that I would call out or come up to her. Like I was different. She didn't like it and she couldn't handle it. So then I went into sixth grade and there were a new group of people. And I was like, okay, this is great. Like, there's different schools coming together. And it was great at first, but there were still people who I grew up with in my elementary school who knew that I had that victim, easy target mentality. And they targeted me. And I'm not going to go into like, I could literally take this whole podcast to like tell you about all the experiences, but that repeated over and over again, like severe isolation from people who were my friends who turned on me. And then in the workplace, a colleague who literally got the whole sixth grade to turn on me. And then another colleague who like buddied up with my boss and would make fun of me. It's just like one thing after another. And it was just who I became at that point. And if I would say anything to try to stand up for myself, like it didn't land well. It got awkward. So anyway, fast forward, I become an ADHD coach. I got coached for the first time. I understood my strengths, my weaknesses, how I was showing up for myself and others, and how to execute things for a long period of time. And then I was doing something that I loved doing, and I didn't have a boss. And I was able to help people just like me, who I didn't know at the time were just like me. And that made me feel good. It made me feel like I had a purpose. And I found my people through working, and I have an amazing team. And suddenly, like, my confidence just skyrocketed because I was able to have these small pieces of evidence that, like, okay, I have what it takes to feel good about myself. And because I was building that momentum of feeling good with myself, it brought confidence. And then eventually I had the language to stand up for myself or avoid bullies that I knew
Yeah.
were bullies.
So looking back on your experience, do you think that you knew at the time that that is what was happening, or is your understanding of what happened because of that growth that you just described right there?
That's a great question. When it first started, I did not understand it. I mean, my brain was definitely not mature enough to comprehend what was happening.
And the adults didn't either, didn't know, or didn't, they didn't know what to say. And so they just said the jealousy comment, which,
Exactly.
like you said, is not helpful.
Yeah, and some of the adults were the bullies too.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think I understood, but then, my processing speed is slower. So I had an auditory processing disorder. So when someone was bullying me out of nowhere, right, when they first started the bullying or the social exclusion, it didn't make sense why it was happening or like what was happening. And then it took my brain time to process things. And then I was like, oh, yeah. That just happened. Like, they were just a bully. Like, I can't believe that just happened. Right. So, I think because of the repeated behavior over time, that's a really good question. I learned to identify, oh, this is bullying, or this person is a bully. Let me stay away from them.
So now today, through after going through all that, I mean, I imagine you are, have you gotten quite good at identifying that people that are potential, like potential bullies, or is it that you are more aware of your own behavior that might make you susceptible to it, or maybe a combo of
I'm very
both?
aware of my behavior that makes me susceptible to it, but I also love my behavior that makes me susceptible to
Yeah,
it
right.
too. It's like
Yeah,
this
yeah,
vulnerability
yeah,
and
yeah.
playfulness and funniness, and I don't
Yeah.
want to change that.
No,
Like, I don't.
uh-uh, yeah.
So I have surrounded myself with groups of really nice people. And if I was to speak to my younger self now, I probably would have been like, hey, these people over here at this other lunch table,
Yeah, they're your people.
they have an open spot for me to
Yeah,
sit,
yeah, yeah.
and I didn't want to sit there. So that was on me. I thought I had to like chase these people who are mean. So now I feel good enough about myself that I don't chase that.
Yeah.
And I did that for so long, not only with friends, but with men.
Yeah,
So it was
yeah,
a
yeah.
repeated pattern for sure.
It's really interesting how when you, I mean, you know, this is true for any diagnosis, right? When you get a diagnosis of something, it gives you a lens through which to look
Oh, yeah.
at your life. And so what a gift that is, right? It,
Yeah.
at first, it can feel like a burden, like, oh no, I have this diagnosis. But then you're able to say, like, oh, I can explain things
Yep.
through that diagnosis. So it's, I forget where I was going with that, but I think that it, I imagine that there are lots of people out there today who are getting a late diagnosis of, of like, of ADHD or of some other kind of neurodivergence. I imagine that that lens is shining a light on a lot of their experiences as
Very good
children.
point.
Yeah.
Very good point. And think about it also, how often do you really reflect as a child?
Yeah.
Or someone with ADHD, we're constantly in motion, not looking at our peripherals.
No. I mean, if you think
And
about it from an executive function point of view, of course they don't, like, they don't
right.
have that metacognition skill yet. They don't
Right.
have the,
Right.
perspective taking yet.
Right.
So,
Literally, when I was going to therapy growing up, it wasn't that I was reflecting. I was just spitting back what happened, and that would give me more anxiety because I would bury the situations. So now, and later on, clearly my executive functions are developed at this point, but still, it wasn't until 35 that I really started knowing how to reflect the right way.
Well, I mean, I guess that makes sense if you think about people with ADHD, their executive function skills are going to be a little bit delayed. And if neurotypical brain isn't done developing until 30, then yeah, that timing is. Yeah. So speaking of executive function skills, how, like, I guess, how can bullying impact them? I mean, we see that challenges with executive function skills would make you more of a target for that self-regulation challenges, perspective taking challenges. But I also think that there's got to be the reverse, where the bullying does impact kids' executive functioning. So how do you see that in yourself, and how do you see that in the people that you work with today?
So repeated bullying over time definitely gave me CPTSD, like complex trauma. And because of that stressor over and over, it activated the stress response system. And that's flooding the brain, of course, with cortisol. So chronic stress weakens attention, working memory, planning, and regulation. Right? Looks very similar to ADHD. And in adulthood, bullying or workplace harassment can cause executive burnout too, brain fog, avoidance, emotional exhaustion. So, someone who's repeatedly bullied can go into a state of survival, protecting, avoidance. I remember my friends in high school, and this literally when it, I was preparing for this podcast, it made me think back. So, like, there are these glimpses of long-term memory that get activated. And I remember in high school, my friend said, Brooke's always MIA. And I was MIA because I didn't want anyone to really know who I was. I would be jumping from like thing to thing, group to group, but then only like putting like one foot in. But I was afraid to expose my true, authentic self.
And also, if you are experiencing burnout, like, I mean, kids experience that as well, and your executive function skills are being impacted, then of course you're going to seem MIA, because you are, like, even if you don't make that intentional choice not to do that, you are disconnected.
Yep, I was very, I definitely dissociated more than I thought. And I still do that today to an extent because I get activated being a stepmom, feeling like I don't belong sometimes. Yeah, even when I was there physically, I wasn't really there physically.
Well, I mean, it makes sense that you would be protecting yourself. So I just want to revisit the idea of that, of our belief in ourself, and how that can really impact us over our lives. And when it starts off, so when we're so young, like, even if you're not bullied, right, and you have ADHD, especially if it's undiagnosed, then it can really set up like an inner narrative that is quite negative. And so then, if you are being bullied, that negative narrative is probably being reinforced by the bullying behavior. So, can you talk about that a little bit?
So we hear, it says the science out there that we hear 20,000 more negative messages by the age of 10 than neurotypicals. So there's that. And not until we're adults do we understand that story is not facts. But it takes, I think the data says that it takes eight positives to replace one negative. So if it's reverse and you're hearing eight negatives and one positive, you're never going to feel good about yourself. And then with an ADHD brain, Dr. Howell talks about how negative comments are like Velcro, right? Like it's hard to not stick. And then positive are like Teflon, they roll off. So we're wired with negativity bias. And the human brain is wired with negative. Like 80% of our thoughts are negative, 95% of our thoughts are repetitive. Then you have ADHD on top of it, and it's a whole new ball game. So you start believing what you're hearing, and then that's where the rejection sensitive dysphoria comes in, right? Then you have like this perceived rejection, even if it's not real. So there is a slew of things, and then the chronic stress causes anxiety, and that anxiety can turn into depression. So you feel worse about yourself, and you're not getting sleep, and it's a vicious, vicious cycle.
Yeah, and then if you're tired, then it's harder to put in the effort that it takes to not have those thoughts, to counter those, you know, those cognitive distortions, those automatic negative thoughts. So yeah, it is. The vicious cycle is exactly right.
And we're not like really given those tools to know how to conquer the cognitive distortions.
I know so often where I've taught clients about cognitive distortions, or we talk a lot about them in this motivation and productivity program that we have, like where we are, people are trying to get stuff done. And when we ask them, what got in the way of getting the thing that you had, you know, set out to do done, a lot of it is those cognitive distortions, you know, those stories, like you said, the stories that our brains tell ourselves. And so, yeah, if you're tired, if you are, you know, if you have this, you know, PTSD from being bullied or from whatever, you know, traumatic experience you've had, it's really going to impact your ability to not believe those stories that your brain is telling you. And also, like you said, I mean, we are evolutionarily wired to think more negatively because we had to stay alive being alive was really challenging. So of course we're going to be like, yeah, what's the worst thing that could happen now? And let's be ready for that.
Exactly. No, I mean, still to this day, I'm like very hyper aware, and I understand that's a symptom of ADHD, but it's also a symptom of the PTSD. Like I hear everything and I sense everything, and I try to turn it off with the skills that I have, and, you know, talking to myself in a different way and being proactive and having some reactive strategies. But I know, and this, like with kids, it's so much more challenging, but like, to your point, when we're stressed and we're tired, and then after school, we have sports, we have this, we have that, and we don't have really like any downtime to recover, it's going to be hard to get yourself to a place where you can regulate. Bullying teaches you that you can't accept your authentic self. And then over time, of course, that is external criticism that turns into that internalized voice, the harsh judgment, the perfectionism. And then the inner critic mimics the bullies. And then you believe that you'll mess up. Yeah. No one likes me. Stay quiet. And that's literally what happened to me. Like the more I tried, the more I got pushed back because the bullies were like, oh, you know, like I got her, right? So then I just shut up and isolated myself.
Yeah. One thing that my therapist said to me, which has just like really, really stuck with me, and it really guides me almost every day, is we do not have to believe our core beliefs. Ooh. Which I love. Like when she first Whoa. Said that, I was like, what? Right?
Go on.
Yeah, we don't have to believe these core beliefs, and these core beliefs come from our experiences as children, and also, you know, the things that we experience today. But I do think they start off when we're young. And so if someone, you know, I imagine that statement would be very helpful for someone who was bullied as a child, because those bullying incidents absolutely, you know, contribute to, like what we were saying before, you know, these beliefs we have about ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And like an exercise that I did when I was being coached was going through my story of the first time I got bullied. And then from there, kind of figuring out like what I was telling myself, that core belief, like I'm not good enough. Like that was my belief, right? And I know this sounds crazy, but I kept saying the story of the fourth grade table incident where I got rejected, the Steve Urkel thing, out loud over and over again. And I only said the facts. I separated the facts from the story and I said it out loud like 10 times to the point where I was numb and I like didn't have any like feeling associated
Yeah,
with
took
it
the power out
anymore.
of it.
It took the power out of it. Exactly.
That's cool.
And then with the whole core belief thing of I'm not enough, then of course, like there was a lot of like proactive reframing that comes with
Yeah.
that.
I was just thinking about this strategy that my therapist offered, which I think would also be really great. Actually, I've used it with some of my clients. It's such a great strategy. So it's, she calls it tabling it, and I don't know, maybe other people have heard of this too, but you actually draw a little table with four legs. So it can just be a line with four legs coming down, or you could get creative and do the three-dimensional thing. But on top of the table, you write the thing, like the thing that is that you can't let go, or the thing that's kind of bothering you. And then on the legs, you write four beliefs that you have about the thing. And then what you do is you reframe all four beliefs. So you take each one, and then you like, if you think that you're like, I don't know, you're not going to be able to do well on something, like you have something big coming up and you think you're not going to be able to do well on it, and then you write like, well, I haven't done well in the past, or like you just kind of write down all these beliefs that you have, and then you go in and you change it to say like, I haven't done well in the past. You could change to like, I have learned a lot from my past experiences, and then maybe you could
Yes.
write those things down. And then you go through and it's crazy because it doesn't force you, but it gives you the opportunity to reframe four statements that
That
you
is
believe
so
about
cool.
yourself. Yeah, so it's not just like one. You have to, in order to have a table stand up, you need to do all
Four
four.
legs.
And it's such a great exercise to do that. So I imagine that those beliefs that we have that stem from our childhood bullying experiences, or just negative experiences, just having ADHD or some other kind of diagnosis like that, I think that that would be a really good exercise to reframe multiple beliefs that you have about this one thing.
Absolutely. I also like how it's visual. So you're getting all of these negative thoughts out of your head onto paper, and then they're your words that you use to reframe them. It's not someone else who's saying, oh, well, think of it this way or differently. Like, so you actually believe in the reframe and then you see it. So when you think that negative inner critic thought again, you see the table and you look at the legs again. I like
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. And then when you're done, you have these like four really strong statements that are supporting that, whatever
That table.
that is. Yes, the
I
table.
love
Yeah.
that.
Yeah. And you're writing it down,
Amazing.
which, as research says, the things that we write down are, we're more likely to remember. And
Remember working memory. Yep.
So I love that. And I think that reframing, I don't know. I kind of get, I don't know if you experience this too, but sometimes I feel like people think that reframing is kind of like a,
A woo-woo, like.
yeah, right. That's a good word for it. But
Yeah.
I mean, I personally have worked really hard on reframing things for myself over the past maybe 8 years, 8 or 10 years. And it has been a game changer.
With reframing, it almost is like visioning and the reticular activating system. So
Wait, the what?
it's a network of neurons in the brainstem, and it's responsible mostly for regulating arousal, wakefulness, sleep-wake cycles, and selective attention by filtering incoming sensory information. So, it's deep within the brainstem, and what happens is it acts like a filter. So, like you focus on the important information and ignore the less relevant stimuli. So, for example, if you are reframing over and over again, or you're doing vision work to who you want to become, that's going to help you believe what you're reframing.
That's cool. And so it gives you the ability to filter out the
Yes,
other stuff. Ah,
exactly. It
that's cool.
processes the information and just determines what's important and needs attention. So the more you train your brain to think the way in a more positive direction, in a reframing direction, then you're going to get that type of output and input.
I mean, it really does make sense when you just, I guess that would be our argument against somebody who says it's woo-woo, because let's like just rely on the brain science behind it. And I saw someone say something like speak about this once about the, when whatever we do again and again, we're going to get good at. And so I feel like we
Wherever focus
forget.
goes, energy
Yeah,
goes, right?
right. Yeah. And I feel like we forget that we're going to get good at unhelpful behaviors. You don't just get good at helpful behaviors. You also get good at unhelpful behaviors.
So the reticular activating system pays attention to what you pay attention to. So if you're gonna focus on the negative, right?
You're gonna ask
Like,
what
I
you're gonna
don't see
say.
the negative. If you focus every time on the squirrel, then you're going to think a squirrel is important. But if you focus and intentionally on reframing and the positives and gratitude, then that's what your brain's going to focus on.
And of course, we should probably bring up toxic positivity. That's not what we're talking about.
No, that's not what we're talking
That's
about.
not
We're
what we're
not
talking
trying to
about.
gaslight ourselves into thinking that everything is going to be fine.
No, we do need to grow and recognize where
Yes.
we can do some
Yes.
work. Yes.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
I really like to talk about that a lot with my clients because it is so important to learn to pay attention to what we're doing and to notice. Well, no wonder I always am saying I'm so stupid, or I can't handle this. What were you thinking? The things that we say inside of our head, and how you have to first notice that, and then you have to change the connections in your brain and get
Correct.
that RATS system
Yeah,
to
awareness is the first step to everything,
You
right?
can't, if you're not aware of it. You can only pay attention to what you actually know is
No,
there. So,
right, exactly. Yeah, I agree.
Oh, it's so hard being a self-actualized person is so hard.
I know, because there's
So much
so many
work.
different, it really is. I had this conversation with a bunch of people who've done therapy on themselves and, to show up in their relationships with their partner, to show up as, for themselves in a way that they were seeking. And it's so much easier to not do the work on
Oh,
yourself, right? Because then there's no work. But like the work takes time, it takes effort. But the goal, and it's going to be really hard sometimes, I'm going to feel really crappy. But the goal is to have more positive days in the long term than negative. And I can't even tell you how much I feel like coaching and therapy and understanding myself and continuing to grow and learn new things and having the ADHD community around me has been so incremental in my life.
What message about ADHD or about, I mean, everything that we've talked about today, what do you want people to tell themselves? What do you want people to hear when they talk to themselves?
Yeah. So this resonates a lot with me and my clients. You don't have to earn your worth through constant overcompensation, masking, perfectionism. It's impossible, right? You're already enough, exactly as you are. There's hope out there, but be who you are, and you're enough even on the messy days.
And it's hard to believe that. It's hard to
It
believe
is.
that. Yeah.
It
And so that's
is.
where we have to say it again and again.
But just fun fact, like the other day I was doing this cryotherapy thing with my amazing, nice tennis team. All the girls are nice. And I felt, so there's cryotherapy and then like some like compression therapy. I'm sitting on this chair that looks like a massage chair, and I have these like big like air leg things that look like these big boots on my legs. So they were like straight and I couldn't move my legs. Anyway, I go down to like grab my phone and I fall forward off the
Oh
chair because the chair slips. And my whole tennis team sees, of course, and they're laughing and whatever. And my tennis captain goes, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at you. And in the past, I would have taken that so offensively, right? Like, oh my God, like I'm being made fun of, blah, blah, blah. But I love these people. I trust these people. They're nice, you know, like, so a lot of this self-worth is also finding your people and finding at least one person in a group that you can trust and connect to, because there's so much more power, of course, in having a group of people rather than you standing on your own. So,
Yeah. And in order to meet those people, you
sure.
have to be vulnerable, put yourself out there and find confidence, you know,
In the
in
discomfort.
yeah, 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 yeah. Cool. All right. Well, thanks so much for this conversation, and I really hope that people can relate to some of your story and
Thank you, Hannah.
some of the sort of I don't know. I mean, you are not alone. We know this.
Definitely not
So,
alone. And I mean, if 47% of children with ADHD are being bullied, that's like one out of two ADHDers out there. So just look out for those signs of withdrawal, the psychosomatic symptoms, and know that there's help out there. You can reach out to you, right? You can reach out to us. You can reach out to the guidance counselor, but just be an active listener and know that you're not alone.
And I forgot to, or we didn't get to the name of your podcast in the beginning. So,
Oh, the
yes.
name of my podcast is Successful with two L's with ADHD. And the reason why it's called that is because we're shining a spotlight on the strengths of people with ADHD. So we talk about real people's journeys before the diagnosis and after the diagnosis and how they have felt full and happy and successful with their ADHD,
I love it.
whatever that looks like to them.
Yeah, and we need that's what those are the stories we really need to hear. So, yeah, good job.
Thank
Where can people find you?
you. Coaching with Brooke everywhere. Instagram is a big one. Our website is Coaching with Brooke with an E.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Brooke.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And that's our show for today. But before we wrap up, I just want to take a few minutes to add some additional strategies, especially for parents and adults who may be wondering what additional steps they can take if they or their child are experiencing bullying. Brooke's story gives us such a powerful window into how deep and long-lasting the impact of bullying can be for people with ADHD. And as painful as those experiences are, there are also ways to build in protection, safety, and self-worth proactively before, during, and after bullying happens. So let's talk through a few strategies. Okay, so for parents, kids with ADHD often have wonderful creativity and playfulness. We know this, but those same traits can also make them more vulnerable to teasing or exclusion. And one of the most powerful things that parents can do is teach and practice social strategies ahead of time with their kids. So you might want to look into role-playing some common situations. So maybe like practice with your child how to respond to teasing, exclusion, or peer pressure. You could maybe script like a write out a short little script that has may have that the kid feels confident saying to somebody, and then they'll have the words ready in the moment instead of freezing or maybe even reacting impulsively. So maybe, for example, you could say like, "That's not funny to me," or "I don't like that. Stop." And that the more they practice, as we know, we get better at the things we practice. So the more they practice these in a role play situation, the easier it will be for them to say it naturally and in the moment. We also want to work on building communication and boundary setting skills. So with your, you know, with your kiddos, talk about what it feels like in their body when a boundary is crossed. And this is a good skill to learn regardless of whether you are at risk for bullying or not. And that quick gut sense of like, this doesn't feel right, you know, just learning how to use our interoception, which is the ability to sense our body and how it feels and what's happening inside our bodies. You know, when we learn that as kiddos, it helps us so much as we get older. So help your kid name it and practice what to do next when they feel that. It's not about changing who we are, who they are, right? We don't want to do that. It's just about giving them tools that help them protect themselves and protect their openness and kindness. And then also make a safety plan. You know, make sure your kiddos know who the trusted adults in their lives are. So maybe at school, it's going to be their teacher, counselor, or a coach. And then make sure that your child knows that they can go to that person right away if something happens. So certain settings, like maybe the lunch or on the bus, tend to be more difficult. So see if there's alternatives that minimize that exposure without actually isolating them. So these situations can be really tricky, but you know, if it is happening or you suspect it's happening, I really encourage you to speak up. For parents and adults, when bullying is happening now, you know, if bullying is ongoing, whether it's at school or in the workplace for the adults, it's really important to start documenting what is happening. This is really essential. So you should really write down dates, times, what was said or what was done, and who was there for it. And then that log allows like schools or your HR department to take formal action. And it also helps you trust yourself more and feel less gaslit by your own memory of what happened. So for parents, you might ask your child to describe what happened and write it down together, even if they're not ready to act on it. Just, you know, talk about it and write it down. And then you can decide later whether you bring it up to a, you know, to someone at the school, the principal or guidance counselor. But it's just really important to have the record of it. And then for adults, if you're being harassed at work, you want to make sure you document everything in a secure and time-stamped way. So, you know, you want to make sure that you're able to accurately record when these things happen. So knowing your HR policies, and if possible, if you have an ally or a mentor, either in your workplace or maybe in a former workplace, you know, talk with them and make sure that you're not doing this alone. And for adults, you know, we need to manage this emotional fallout of bullying. So many adults with ADHD who have been bullied, especially when they were children, often experience something called hyper-awareness in the workplace. And that's where you are like constantly scanning for danger or replaying conversations, wondering if you've said something wrong. This, you know, can also be experienced, that the experience of rejection sensitivity dysphoria. And this comes from the nervous system always being on alert after repeated experiences of, you know, something socially that was threatening. And so when that happens, try to pause and ask yourself, what are the facts here? And what story might my brain be telling me? What story might my brain be kind of filling in? And it's a small but powerful way to separate what's real from that old internal critic that bullying can really, you know, kind of strengthen and leave behind. And so over time, doing this can really help calm that sort of hypervigilant part of your brain and then strengthen your ability to self-regulate in the moment. And of course, as always, like I said before, you really do need to practice these things. So practice it when you're not feeling threatened, and then, so when you are feeling threatened, you're able to take those actions. And then lastly, let's talk a little bit about rebuilding our self-worth. Recovering from bullying is not just about stopping the external behavior. Like Brooke said, it is about healing that internal narrative. And so, you know, just as Brooke and I talked about, working with an ADHD coach or a therapist can really help you rewrite those old stories that we tell ourselves and build trust in ourselves again, and then start focusing your attention on what's going right. And just like Brooke talked about, the brain's reticular activating system really does pay attention to what you pay attention to. So when you intentionally notice the progress, the support, that strength that you're building, your brain really can learn to filter for that instead of the criticism and negativity. So if you or your child are struggling with bullying and ADHD, we've linked some additional resources in the show notes. And as always, this podcast is just a stop on your journey, right? It is not a substitute for medical or mental health advice. And if you need help with bullying or your ADHD, please, please, please reach out to a professional for additional support. They are there to help.
And if you have any thoughts on today's episode, I would love to hear from you. You can email me at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. And thank you so much for helping us spread the word about executive function skills. Sharing the podcast, reviewing it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify really does make a difference for us. Thank you. And you can also sign up for our subscriber email. We let you know when we have a new podcast episode out. And my mom told me that she loves getting those emails. So be like my mom and sign up for our subscriber email. You can find it on our website, beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. Many thanks to Sean Potts, our editor and producer, who has been helping behind the scenes for all these years, to Brooke Schnittman for joining me for this great conversation, and to my colleague, Rose Saluti, for connecting me with Brooke. Thanks for listening.